Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
Join Irma Francis as she explores the transformation from adulthood to soulhood. Having achieved the life goals of adulthood and met the expectations of family and society, we may feel like there is something missing. This something could be a direct contact with our soul. It is through soul contact that we become ready to let go of the conditioned self and allow our true self to step forward and take the lead. We shift into a deep and compassionate soulhood, connecting us to our divinity as well as our humanity. Irma Francis opens a portal to the exploration of soulhood by inviting open-ended inquiries into this eternal dimension.
Hello, and welcome to Adulthood to Soulhood. This is Irma Francis. Our topic tonight is midlife crisis or transformation. I'm joined by my co-host, psychologist Ernie Vecchio. Welcome, Ernie.
Hey, it's great to be here, Irma. I'm so excited for you to be in this portal with you.
Oh, thank you so much. I thought it might be a good idea before we begin talking about the topic if we each told the listeners just a little bit about ourselves and what we do.
Okay. Do you want me to go first or you want to
sure.
go first?
Sure. You go ahead.
Okay. Okay. Well, for folks that have been paying attention to Sedona, I am the host of The Soul's Intent. And that's what I do from a spiritual standpoint on the air. But in my professional life, I am a clinical and rehabilitation psychologist and I say slash spiritual teacher because I have brought a psycho-spiritual approach to the human condition and working with severe trauma. So most of my background is working in a trauma hospital. And the last time I counted, I have treated and touched about 10,000 lives and 10,000 lives have touched me. And so that's what I'm doing and that's who I am, I guess, at this point. And I, of course, I'm an author and my website is myname.com.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I have just a short little intro here. I started out as a life coach and quickly realized that my gifts in service were more centered in the exploration of spiritual values and evolving through spiritual understanding. So I aligned my work towards spiritual mentoring, and that's what I'm doing now. And I can be reached at Solution Life, and that's www.soulutions.net. Okay. So I thought I'm just going to read a couple paragraphs, Ernie, before we begin our open discussion. So our discussion tonight is about why spiritual transformation usually does not happen for many people until midlife and why it is a significant part of our evolution. If we have been living our life with our ego leading the way rather than our heart, we may have created a life that is based on a false image and not our true self. It is usually when we reach midlife, somewhere between 35 and 55, that we might start to feel that something is missing. We may have done all the things that society, family, and friends have expected from us, but have we been true to ourselves along the way? We start to feel uncomfortable and a bit off balance, but may have a hard time pinpointing exactly why. Some symptoms that may come up during this time are feeling a need for change, a loss of interest in things that were once important, feeling confused, anxious, and depressed, feeling like you don't fit into your life. Are we having a midlife crisis or experiencing a spiritual transformation? Maybe they are one and the same. Knowing what to do and what not to do during this time of transition is a major key to either awakening to our higher consciousness or trying to ease our discomfort through some kind of shallow self-gratification. Maybe we have an affair, buy something extravagant, quit our job, shut down emotionally, numb out through alcohol, drugs, or something else. If we can realize that this is a time for deep self-reflection and connect to our higher consciousness, we start to make a subtle inner change. And that change reflects subtle changes in our outer world as well. It is our choices during this time that will make this midlife crisis a change that is either dramatic, possibly causing harm to ourselves or others, or a transformation into a self that is more authentic and awake to higher awareness, creating change through self-responsibility, self-respect, and respect for others. This wake-up call does not always go without disturbances. Change can be a scary process, causing ourselves and the people around us to react from fear. When we start to make the necessary changes towards this transformation, we are rocking the boat, challenging the status quo, changing the plans that other people may have made for our lives. This is a time to have compassion for ourselves and others as we work towards a new normal. So what are your thoughts on that, Ernie?
Well, that's wonderful. I first of all like the fact that you say that midlife is 35 to 55. I think that's great because I think technically it's 35 to 45, but I like the fact you added 10 additional years on there.
Well,
that shows,
things are changing.
That shows
we're
where
living
we are.
Longer.
Yeah. Yeah, that shows where we are in the whole process. Well, the midlife process is really, and I like the way you said that, it's more of an opportunity than it is a crisis. And the opportunity, as you said, is to go inward. But sadly, most of us stay external with it. You know, we get the way I tend to describe it is we have the house, the car, the dog, the cat, the son, the daughter, the husband, the wife, and something seems to be absent, and we find out that it's us. We're absent because we spend our lives accumulating and acquiring and obtaining these things. We kind of lost ourselves along the way. So the mistake many of us make, of course, is getting a new husband, a new wife, a new job, a new location, thinking that that's the solution. And if you leave it to the ego, that distraction will work. But I think what you're saying tonight in the show is that this is an opportunity to go inward rather than to go out with that solution.
Right, right.
Is that fair?
Because exactly. And if we do, you know, go outward and change the outward things, I think it's going to just come back around again. I think it just keeps coming back around. Yeah.
Absolutely. And you lose time. You lose 5 and 10 year chunks when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you literally getting a new relationship, a new job, a new location, that could eat away 5 years. And as you hit midlife, 5 years is a lifetime.
Right.
And you wonder where the time went as you chase that external carrot, if you will. When you are the person that you're waiting for, and that's the key, and that's the thing that we kind of have to figure out. The other piece about that too, Irma, that I think is profound is that why midlife? Why is that the turning point? Well, because our life on the planet, you know, our own mortality now is kind of hitting us between the eyes at a level that we weren't paying attention to before. We have friends that are dying, parents that may be passing away. Our own mortality ends up becoming kind of a wake-up moment, and
right.
So that's part of that process. Yes.
Yeah, and I think also during this time there can be a shift in values, and some of those are the self-importance of ego shifting into a more unpretentious humbleness. A shift from control, power, and domination to an acceptance of what is, the realization that the only thing you can change is yourself, and a shift from consumption, and holding on into releasing and simplifying and letting go of everything that's not really needed, I know those were definitely shifts in values for me. I would say probably around 40. I just had this real need to let go of stuff. I just had, you know, too much stuff, and I wanted to simplify and go within and kind of let go of a lot of the external distractions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Well, and it's unfortunate, but the human ego is so tenacious that that it typically takes some kind of drama, some kind of chaos, some kind of two before between the eyes for us to really kind of see the significance of this time, or we will stay external with it. And so not everybody goes in. That's why I said it's a midlife opportunity. It's an opportunity to shift, as you said, from this idea of who you think you are and becoming who you really are, but not everybody is driven to that kind of discovery. And I think that's the core of what you're trying to say tonight is that it's an opportunity to move beyond the personal and move beyond the ego stuff. Yeah.
And it can be hard to do because at least in our society, and it's the only one I have ever lived in, so it's all I can speak about. There's not a lot that's modeled for that shift. You know, there are so many distractions out there and all the new technology and all the things that we can distract ourselves with through from different cell phones to television to cars to you name it. And it's just not something that's being modeled for us. So it's really that inward journey is going on a journey without a true model or a map.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the maps are there. I think certainly I'm leaving a map. You're leaving a map. I think that not everybody is interested in the map. I think that's part of the issue is that the human ego wants shortcuts. It doesn't want to take the long way around. And it sounds like the inner journey is a long, drawn-out process. But in actuality, it's not. Getting present with yourself and being in the moment of your life and stringing those moments together to experience your life is really quite easy when you understand the significance of what the return is. But the ego scares a lot of people away from that because it's they don't want to look at their age. They don't want to look at the passage of time. So it's an opportunity to cultivate depth, really. And that's probably why it's kind of ignored in the culture is we don't advocate the cultivation of depth. And if we can keep people glued to the television set and glued to the internet and glued to whatever is going on in the world, then they're not going to have any depth. You know, they're not going to cultivate that. You know, taking their suffering and their adversity and making something special from it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something I realized in doing a little bit of I realized it before, but it just kind of jumped off the page at me, the importance of there, Ernie?
Yes, I am, yes.
Oh, okay, I thought I heard something. The importance of when people do hit this midlife crisis or this opportunity for change, not only opening up to, you know, beyond the physical into the spiritual and getting guidance from there, but I think maybe what prevents people from being able to move forward in that is getting the right kind of psychological help. And that's why I really appreciate the work that you do, that you combine the psychological with the spiritual, because I think really both of those are needed to make this transformation.
Yeah, I think part of the problem with the human ego is that it isn't really interested in reflection. What it's interested in is avoiding pain and getting the next stimulation, whatever the next stimulation is, and living its life based upon a past tense version of itself. And so it's curious to me that it's only in midlife that we actually have an opportunity to grow up. I mean, you know, a lot of folks don't realize in the Eric Byrne inner child model that the inner child never gets any older than a teenager. And so at midlife, you actually have the possibility of accessing this 19-year-old version of yourself that is never going to ever be any older than 19, but it desperately wants to get here and be part of this internal life of yours. And so it's challenging you to make these changes, and that's really the crisis. If you don't acknowledge the energy that inner child brings with it, then it comes out ugly, and it comes out in a way that you will either move toward addiction, you'll take on another relationship, you'll change jobs just to shut that kid up that's inside of you that's saying this is it, this is as good as it gets, and so that challenging inner child is really the ego that people don't want to address, and instead what they do is distract it with whatever they can.
Right. But
something bright and shiny.
Yeah.
I mean, for a lot of men, it's,
right.
I hate it. I mean, I've got a convertible, but I've had a convertible.
Is it red?
No, actually it's not. It's black, which is a great midlife color. But I would say I've had a convertible since I was in my 20s. But I hated that. That's one of the symbols of a midlife crisis: is that you see an old guy driving a convertible, and the next thing is you see an old guy on a motorcycle. You know, he never had one until, you know. And so I don't like those stereotypes, but that's part of it. That's how we do externalize it. We go out and we get the convertible, and
right.
You know, and again, not realizing it's an opportunity to look deeper. There's a distinction I think you're making. I think you're trying to get across tonight. There's a difference between maturity, and staying in the context of adulthood, and cultivating depth. You know, maturity is acting your age, learning and growing from experience. Depth is finding the worth in your suffering, and that is a totally different animal. And so if there's anything that happens in midlife, that's the opportunity. It isn't just an opportunity to mature and to finally grow up and be who you were intended to be. You also get to say, wow, what is the meaning and purpose of all that I have been through? And that's where the depth comes. And not everybody's driven to find the gold, if you will, in their life experiences. But I find it very curious. I think USA Today did a poll year before last, and asked if God could show up and you could ask a definitive question and get an answer, what would you ask? You know, 6% said, you know, ask if there was a heaven or a hell. I think 6% asked, why does bad stuff happen to good people? 12% asked if there was a heaven or a hell. 18% didn't know what to ask. And the remaining 40-some-odd percent, why am I here? What's my purpose? Well, that's midlife.
That is the mantra for midlife. Yeah, what is my purpose?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, why am I here? What's my purpose? And not everybody's driven to find that out. You know, look at what's happening in the culture and just in whole concept of retirement. I mean, we're being told now there's no such thing as retirement. We have to work until we're 90. I mean, this is most people, and so. Retirement used to be sitting back on a rocking chair on a porch and looking over your life and the lessons that you have learned and somehow passing that down to the children in some shape or form. Now it's, I got to go to work. I got time to talk to the kids. I got, you know, in fact, we have senior citizens working right beside kids. McDonald's.
Absolutely. Exactly.
So the whole complexion has changed about how we look at all that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder, as you're saying that, and I don't want to clump all people into one basket, because certainly that's not the case. But if we're living, at least seems like a big portion of our society is living way beyond our means. So, and so to me, that's part of what makes retirement, put it off into an older age, is because we're living beyond our means. If we lived within our means, would that really be the case? I don't know.
Well, I know that that's the whole premise of our economy, is how do you turn people into debt slaves? I mean, that's really where we are.
Yeah.
And
so
yes, we have become a culture that that is indebted beyond our capacity to pay back that debt, and which is a terrible burden. And now it's so great that, you know, that it's being passed on to the kids. I mean, kids that are, I mean, if you consider, I forget the statistic, but I think it was, if you did the math on what we owe in national debt, based upon the number of people in the country, every human being in the United States of America is $65,000 in debt. That's including everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if everybody took the debt that the government is in, it would be around $65,000 per person.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells you that we're just so, it's now the numbers are just far off. It's beyond our imagination.
Yeah,
I agree. It certainly is, you know, part of dealing with our death. But again, the beauty of spiritual work, I believe, is that you're trying to figure out, you first of all have to look at what is money symbolic of, and it is symbolic of personal resources. And so it's a symbolic, and so what it's supposed to be is freedom. Financial independence is supposed to be giving you freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the same thing. It's the same thing internally. If you find gold internally, then that should be freeing you up to be who you really are. And so you've got, and you've got that in the depth of your experience. So your life has meaning. You know, I say to people all the time, if you're going to make a movie of your life and the credits are rolling, you just got to be watching it. You know, what's the title? And if the best you can come up with is Stuff Happens Then You Die, then you need to rethink your title. You know? And so I think that spiritual work, and I think midlife is kind of the doorway or the opportunity to step into spiritual work, is an opportunity to find a moral to your story, to find meaning in what you have lived and what you have experienced. And then, of course, turn around and share it, you know?
Right. And to me, when I... Go ahead.
I was just going to say that's my biased opinion of that. So that's all I'm going to add to that.
To me, when I ask myself that question, what is the meaning and purpose of my life? And I've said this for, a long, long time. I've had this awareness for a long, long time, not necessarily just at midlife, but it probably intensified at midlife, that I really honestly feel that the best things in life are free. And so I get a lot of meaning from that. I mean, you know, to watch the sun come up, to feel the wind blow, to listen to the birds. I mean, all the things in life that are free give me tremendous meaning.
And I agree, and I think, again, that's the, when I think of most lay people, and I think of, and when I say lay people, I mean people that are not ordinarily doing internal seeking, internal searching, midlife is that it is brought into the foreground because of their own mortality, and they begin to start sensing, you know, I don't have a lot of time left. There's a bunch of stuff I want to do, or a bunch of things I want to accomplish, places I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so time becomes more precious as we hit midlife. And then our health. I mean, if we're fortunate enough to be healthy, then we have that to contend with as well. And so there are many things to kind of push people into a meaningful, purposeful kind of existence. But not everybody, like I said, is driven to stay there. The ego wants a quick fix. I kind of flash back when I got my first camera, digital camera, and I'm kind of a gadget freak anyway, but I was out in Colorado at a conference, and a rainbow had really just come out over across the lodge we were staying in. And so you can imagine, you got snow-capped mountains off in the background, and you have this beautiful rainbow across these snow-capped mountains. But what do? I got to run to my room and get a camera, right? So I go down the hall, up a flight of steps, down another hallway, into my room, unpack my luggage. I get back out, and of course, the rainbow is gone.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful example. It's a wonderful example of what the ego is about. The ego is about trying to capture that moment. When the soul is about just stay there, and because I can't even close my eyes now and see that rainbow,
mm-hmm.
and had I stayed there and sit in it, I would still have it with me, but I don't, and that's the point that this is what happens, I think, in midlife. Do you remember when you were younger and you would get behind an older person that was driving, and they were driving slow, well below the speed limit, and you used to, like, I don't know about you, but you used to kind of curse at them and say, you know, get out of the way, grandpa, you know. And so that's a little bit what the ego is doing all the time, you see. I mean, and now when you get to where they are, you go, I get it now. And they're literally taking in the rainbow.
Yeah.
They're not in a hurry.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
We've got a brief delay. I apologize for that.
That's okay.
I was just going to say that the ego, that is literally the problem with the human ego, is it happens in a millisecond. It interrupts the beauty of that rainbow. It interrupts a present moment and tells you you should be, or you ought to be, or you could be doing something differently than you're doing, and it gets in the way of that moment. That's all I was going to say there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of that shift or that transformation from a midlife crisis into a higher awareness or different values. For me, when I think of the meaning of life and the purpose of life, it's not anything complicated. It's not anything huge. It's not a big trip somewhere. It's for me, it's very simple. The meaning and purpose of life is to be present in a place of love and to be awake to what's right in front of me and to allow each of those moments to unfold into the next and into the next. And I think that that's possible to live that way no matter what you're doing, even if you are still having to work into an older age. You can still take those values with you wherever you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I mean, it's not complicated, but it is focused attention. It is moving away from the attention and the lens of what I tend to say is the left hemisphere of the brain, in a left hemisphere culture where we need to move into the right side of the brain and see the larger picture. I mean,
mm-hmm.
when you consider that we're spending the earlier part of our lives trying to make sense of the context that we've been given, then it's in a later part of our life that we begin to shift our perspective on that context. And you said it earlier, we simplify. Well, what we're really trying to do is find continuity in what we've experienced and what we've lived according to what we've also are doing now in the present. And so that incongruence of what the ego tells us and what our experiences are is totally the issue. And so, again, not everybody's driven to sort that out. It is not complicated, Irma, but I will tell you that if it was as simple as me saying to somebody, I had a client today, 51-year-old individual who is in a lot of physical pain and very proud and very defensive and guarded and very rigid. And he said to me, you know, there's nothing that you could tell me that's going to make me change my mind about how I feel and think about these things in relationship to my disability and my pain. And And he essentially, you know, said, I know I'm rigid. I know I'm stubborn. I know I'm all these things. He said, maybe you can ask, you can answer a question for me. And he's in a lot of physical pain. He said, a lot of my pain doctors won't answer this question. Maybe you can answer for me. If I amputate my legs, would the phantom pain that I would have be as bad as the pain I'm living in now? That's how drastic he is. Rather than to look at his anger, his depression, his anxiety about where he is.
Sorry, Ernie.
That's okay. Instead of looking at that, what he wants to do is to literally, he's thinking as far as, you know, I would rather amputate my legs than to get something from this pain that I'm in. It's interesting that not everybody approaches life looking for wake-up opportunities and wake-up moments. And I think the core of your show tonight is that that's what good life is. It's a wake-up opportunity, and it is an opportunity to grow in to a version of yourself that you've been waiting your entire life to get to. And it isn't outside of you, it's inside of you, and it is, yeah. But if it was as simple as me just saying, I would be like a trillionaire. It isn't that simple.
Yeah, and I know that it isn't. I guess for me it seems simple because I've had some pretty basic simple values from a really young age. So it's not a huge transition or transformation for me to make. So I'm just speaking for myself that for me it seems simple, but I do realize that for a lot of people it isn't.
Yeah. I see a question in the chat room here that I don't know if you see the question, but it says it seems that midlife crisis is usually connected with couples who are splitting. How does the one who is growing spiritually bring the other along on the ride? And that's a great question. That's a great question. And adds, does a midlife crisis sometimes ignite the transformation towards soulhood? And yes, it does. Absolutely. So that's a two-part question.
Yeah.
First of all, it's very difficult to bring, and you can answer this too, Irma, that it's very difficult to bring somebody along on a journey with you that unless you're kind of operating inside the same context. If that kind of brings out that phrase that couples say, I love her, but I'm not in love with her. That distinction between love as a physical place and love is affection. Is that distinction? And so yes, a midlife crisis played out a lot in the culture, in couples, in the splitting of couples. But it is difficult for one to drag the other one along. That's the first part of that. The second part is: does it ignite the transformation? Yes, it does, because you feel the angst, and you have to make a change. You have to do something. So I don't know what your answer would be to that, Irma, but that was a good question, really.
Yeah, it's a really good question. A couple things came up. What you mentioned about I'm not. How did you put it, Ernie? I'm not in love for the couple.
Yeah, I love her. I love her, but I'm not in love with her, which is making a distinction between affection that is felt towards the other person, but also making the distinction about a dimension that I live in that she cannot enter. And that is what they don't realize they're saying that they don't know that that's the depth of what they're saying, but that's what it means. And so, yes, that certainly is an issue for a lot of couples that approach midlife because at the same time, I see couple work anyway as a growth opportunity or a growth spurt. And certainly an opportunity for reintroduction, and I think I've heard you say that to you in previous shows or whatever. But it is played out, as is job change. Job change is also a midlife crisis for a lot of people. Death of a parent, which really magnifies your own age, is that, but yes, to answer the question about it igniting the transformation towards soulhood, yes, it is an opportunity to spark that, because the angst is the angst. You know, the friction to get here is still there.
Right. And I'm looking at the question in the chat room, and again, I'm going back to that being in a place of love rather than, you know, being in I love her or I love him. So no matter who of the couple, doesn't matter which one it is, whoever reaches that place of being in a place of love, a split may happen from that, but it doesn't have to be what I've seen some splitting up being, where, you know, there has to be a good guy and a bad guy. It can, as long as one of the two people are in a place of love, it can consciously unfold into separating from a place of love rather than blame.
Yes. But I think the other thing too is that and it's a good question, because when people think of midlife crisis, they do think of, I got to get rid of this relationship and get me a new one. Well, that's the solution. That's what people think the solution is to the crisis. When in actuality, it's going on inside of them. It isn't going on outside of them. And so you could plug in another person and you're going to still have the same problem a few months down the road, or maybe a few years down the road, but the same issue is going to pop back up again. And the issue is you're not, that you are the person that you're waiting for, and you are the connection in the relationship that you're trying to have. And the most important one you're trying to have is the one you're having with yourself. And that's the crux of at least what the spiritual work is about. But it's not, And I used to do a lot of couples work and a lot of relationship work, and I think for a while I didn't like it, because it became divorce canceling, not divorce counseling.
Yeah.
People would come in and just want to cancel their relationship, and they were looking, I'm using me like a priest, you know, to pick a side and whatever. But I think that it's just a piece of paper. I mean, if you love somebody and you separate it, and you think it's the worst possible decision you ever could have possibly have made, let's say the ego was pushing you so hard to do it that you just did it, you know, you can always get back together. It isn't carved in stone. And so I just think that it's a symptom. Divorce is a symptom. Job change is a symptom. You know, struggling with aging and what that means, and health issues, is a symptom of a life of a midlife crisis or a life crisis. And but technically it's a transition. It should be said, instead of calling it a crisis, we should call it a midlife transition.
I think so too. And just what you were saying a little earlier about your client today, you know, whether he wants to accept the pain, whether it's physical pain, emotional pain, mental anguish, whatever the pain or the suffering is, the truth is, I mean, I think that's the part of the transition. I know it was for me, is just the acceptance of everything as it is. Somehow we are able to live in this kind of almost delusional way of thinking that we are able to change what is, and we really can't. The only thing we can change are our own thoughts, feelings, and actions. Anything outside of that, we can't. There is no changing it. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, the significance in dealing with chronic pain, which is what this individual is in, is that people don't understand, and it's important to understand that if you're angry at your body and you're angry at your disability, whatever it may be, it's going to spike and magnify your suffering simply because you are attacking your body. Where there's, you know how they say, where there's smoke, there's fire. Well, that's really what anger is. It's fire, and that fire is so. If you've got inflammation in your body and you're angry at your body, you're going to increase that inflammation. That's why I was having a discussion with him. Is that he doesn't understand that his anger, his resentment, his rigidity is actually making his tolerance for his pain less than it would otherwise be, and maybe even worsening the pain. And he will never know. He will never know the difference, because he'll never go that route. He'll never take the he isn't concerned about finding any depth in his suffering. He just wants the suffering to stop, so much so he wants to amputate his legs. And that's pretty severe. That's a pretty severe move.
But whether it's physical pain, emotional pain, whatever the pain is, isn't it kind of a like with your client? Isn't there anger is part of the grief process? Isn't there kind of a grieving of what you wish was, but it really isn't your reality? So there's grieving of what was and what is. And I think, you know, all the different stages of grief that go with that.
Yes. Yeah. So many of us, and again, this falls into the midlife kind of opportunity. So many of us are grieving loss and we don't really know what the object of our loss is typically. And so again, the midlife period is a time to focus on the lost version of yourself. But if you haven't dealt with other losses very well, you're not going to deal with loss of self very well either. So so you're right. It is an opportunity to look at, what am I grieving? What do I feel like I've lost? And of course, midlife is lost time. That's the biggest. Or lost opportunity. But then the next thing is, what is it that I'm afraid of in this next chapter? I knew what I was afraid of initially. What am I afraid of now? And of course, fear of death is also now looming in a different way, particularly if you're midlife and you've had friends that have died and just, you know, fell over dead from a heart attack or had a terminal illness. I mean, and you go, oh my gosh, that could be me. That could have been me. We're the same age. You know, I mean, that's what begins to happen. And of course, what you're supposed to do with that, at least from a spiritual standpoint, is it is to go, wow, I need to stop taking a lot of stuff for granted. If that could have been me, I need to be more appreciative and more in the moment of my own life. If I could be next, you know.
Right. So I wonder. I wonder what's stronger within a person or people, the fear of death or the fear of life?
I think it's the fear of life. They would say death. This gentleman today said he didn't have any fear of death at all, and that's because he's had suicidal thinking, and that's why he doesn't have any fear of death. But he's already in his mind done. He's finished. All he has left is just to move on to the next place. And so that's why. And because of his own guilt and his own rigidity, he's had that kind of thinking. But fear of death, fear of life, they kind of are related. And what we are now in the culture is just afraid of being afraid in general. And that creates kind of anger. We're angry about afraid of being afraid. There's so many really cool opportunities in midlife to begin to say, who am I and why am I and what am I and how am I, and begin to start going on that particular journey. And it's, but like I said, it isn't an opportunity everybody takes.
Right. And to me, a big that value of releasing things and letting things go, to me, has a lot to do with forgiveness of yourself and forgiveness of others. And when I was thinking of that today, something popped up that I've heard you talk about in your shows, which actually, until I heard you talking about it, I don't know why this never came to me, but the concept of mercy. And how you describe mercy as, how do you put it, to be set free for time served?
Setting yourself free for time served. That's actually what would be in a court of law. I like the language of that, because that really is what you're saying. It's a negotiation you're having with the ego. It's like you're saying, set me free for time served. Please let me go.
Yeah, yeah.
And and of course, the ego is going to say, "No way! I'm here until you die. You know, I'm not going anywhere." And so that's why you have to go into the heart, or into the soul, to find the compassion you're seeking, so you can be set free for time served. The ego isn't going to let you go. Isn't going to let you up off the mat. And simply because it doesn't understand what you're asking,
right?
It doesn't understand that if you become free, it becomes free as well. So the ego is still locked in its own fears about what to expect. I love people who always say, "Well, what if I find myself and I don't like who I am?" I always love that question. That's a question that's coming 100% from the ego, because the soul would never ask that kind of question.
Right.
What if I find myself? The soul would just say, "It's not what if I don't like who I am. It's I can't wait to be who I am."
Yeah.
And there's no question that I'm going to like whoever that is. So only the ego would put that qualifier on there.
Right.
And that's how you know it's ego. And so you have to kind of chuckle at those kind of questions. What if I show up and I don't like myself? It's a great question.
And then if you hear that question, now you know it's your ego. It's not your heart. It's not your soul. It's your ego.
No, it's not coming from a real place. No, it's coming from your brain. It isn't coming from your heart. Because your heart will never ask.
Mm. So I see a question in the chat room. Let's see. Don't have my glasses on here.
It's about grief. Most definitely important to feel and work through. Most people don't want to feel the depth of their pain, but this is the key to breakthrough, at least in my experience. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Grieving.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what people don't understand about grief is that your very, very first early experiences with grief really kind of transfer into how you handle grief later on. And so the very first grief that we all undergo, at least in my experience within the human condition, is loss of self. And that happens around junior high school. So it's young. It's young that it happens. And that's in some normal developmental sense. If you have a trauma where you are literally ripped away from your family and from your beginnings, like what happened to me, then it's totally it's much more traumatic. But that loss of self is our very first grief, but we don't realize it because we're so busy trying to adapt and survive what we're going through. We don't even know that we've lost ourselves at this point. We're just in a survival mode so much. And again, this is what happens in midlife. As we begin to recover ourselves, those lost aspects, if you will, then we see how far back it goes. We thought it was last year, last month. It's much, much further back than that. And if you didn't handle that well, if you didn't handle loss of self back then you're going to have a harder time with grief today. That's the way it works. So it's like anything in spiritual work, it's a process of experiencing and understanding and bringing it into your awareness and then growing from it. But we're not always conscious. We're not always conscious that that's what's happening.
Right. And if that does happen at a young age, as you mentioned, then, that loss of self, then the false self really takes over to the point that it could be hard to find your way back to your true self or to the heart connection or to the soul connection.
Yeah, you've got to have had a previous experience, I think, with your own authentic self as a child, a time of innocence, a time of curiosity, a time when you were fully being who you were, and then all of a sudden you had to get back to kind of faking or acting your life at that point. A lot of people have that, and they have that experience. And children start out that way, certainly, and have the opportunity to stay there, to be in a place of curiosity and a place of asking questions rather than a fearful place.
Well, yeah, but right. But given that we are in this society is very left brain, if you do bring that the right brain into the school system, for example, it's not always welcomed. And so I could see where someone would start to lose themselves if part of their self is coming from that right brain and curiosity. And our school system, at least the one I grew up in, did not offer the opportunity for curiosity and exploring and expression and things like that. Right. So,
well, that's what comes back. Again, that's what comes back in the midlife transition is that if you quiet your fears and let go of your fears in that midlife transition, then you become curious again. You begin to start, you know, like you've heard me say kind of off the air and on the air that you're not seeking answers in life. You're seeking better questions. And I think that when we stop questioning, when we stop asking questions, then we no longer grow beyond that point. And so many of us that are in our heads are looking for concrete answers, steps, secrets to shortcuts to getting to a happier, more joyful place, not understanding that what we really need to be doing is asking better questions. And then you have to have somebody there to answer those better questions. And that's the other key, you know. And if you are somebody who has transitioned through these developmental stages, then certainly you're in. You know, you and I hold ourselves out as mentors. Well, only because we feel like we've learned something from our life experiences and we're passing them on at some level. Not everybody feels that way, and many people feel like that their life is meaningless. They don't have any depth. And I mean, I hear it in my office every day. I hear people talking about, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my dog. You know, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my grandchildren. They've got their purpose zeroed in and targeted so significantly targeted on one or two specific things that they're not looking at how large the world is, let alone how large the universe is.
Right. I had an experience the other day. I was walking down the street and just this realization that each of the people that I saw, you know, walking around me, and I just looking at them and thinking, each individual has an inner universe. They have their own universe within. And I just thought, how could a person ever not find value in their lives? Because doesn't it come down to a sense of your own self-worth? Just being grateful for the gift of life, for your breath?
Yeah. You would think. And again, that business of appreciation and gratitude, again, is something that's exaggerated more in midlife because of the time factor. But, you know, isn't it curious that we're spending billions of dollars right now to find out if there's life in the universe, if we are alone or if we're not alone in the universe, and we're spending billions and billions of dollars to make this discovery. What happens if you go in? Is there life in there? You see?
Yeah.
My prediction, I light up at that. I say yes. My prediction is that if you go into your inner universe and you find life in there, that the probability that you're going to find life out here beyond, you know, you're not alone.
Yeah.
You find life in there, you will discover you're not alone. You are connected to everything that is. And so
yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Metaphorically, that's really what we're saying. And are we alone in the universe? Only if we're out here searching for it. If you go in for it, then you're not alone at all. In fact, the word alone comes from two words, which is all one. So as you begin to seek the life that is in you and understand that life that is in you and what that life is, and how it is kind of orchestrating your external world, and how powerful it is, then it's, yeah, it becomes a mind-boggling kind of thing. But
yeah.
That's why I say in my work, I feel like I've been in inner space all this time. And in inner space, I have definitely found life in other worlds.
Yeah, absolutely.
And every one of the, and that's what I heard when you said that everybody has their own internal universe, and yes, they do.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
In those worlds are incredible discoveries. I've been party to many of them, and so it's very profound. Well, you're down to 4 minutes left in your show, dear.
I am. Oh, my goodness. This just flew by. Let's just read real quick. What's this last thing in the chat room? People are in touch with their inner universes. They create one huge, blissful universe. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, yes. That would be the ideal. Well, that's why I like to use the water drop analogy, that if a soul is a drop of water and it wants to grow exponentially on itself and merge with other souls, then literally the only thing that prevents that from happening is egos and the boundaries of egos. So if you consider the ocean the source and the drop of water trying to get back to that source, every soul that you connect with, as she says in this thing, inner universe that you connect with, the larger your universe becomes, and
oh,
the larger
yeah.
you are, right? And you
Absolutely.
Grow exponentially as a result. So it's the same
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Ernie, and I look forward to talking with you again next week. I did come up with a topic for next week, and the topic is going to be on spiritual bypassing. I think that's yeah, a really important topic to be discussed. So did you have anything you wanted to say before we close out?
No, except that this is just a wonderful topic tonight. The idea of taking hold of your inner life and recognizing the significance of that is certainly the first step to soulhood for real. So,
yeah,
very good.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to next week. And if any of the listeners want to contact Ernie, you can be found. How?
Well, they can find me on Facebook, but my website is my name, ErnieVecchio.com. And they can contact me there, and they will see on my website Intentional Guided Evolution, which is what I tend to teach. Yeah.
Wonderful. And I can be contacted through Solutions for Life, www.soulutionsforlife.net. And I'm looking forward to you next week. And thank you so much, Ernie, for joining me tonight. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Okay. It was great to be here. Enjoyed every second of it.
Well, thank you so much. And I will talk to you next week. And the listeners, have a wonderful week. Good night, Ernie.
Good night.